Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the ASAP Weekly Rocket League podcast, a show hosted by LaZero, the man of a thousand rants, and Wamit, the fan favorite. This show details the latest news in the Rocket League scene, esports results, and tips and tricks on how to get better at the game, while sometimes they'll just take a random topic and see where it takes them. Thank you all for listening, and enjoy.
Hello and welcome back to the ASAP Weekly Rocket League podcast. I'm your host, LaZero, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, one we've had once on before. Greybeard is here. How's it going, Greybeard?
I feel like the last time I was here, I was much younger. Feels a long time ago.
I mean, You know what? I feel like since then, right? Like, I feel like that was very much where the word got out on SSA. And yes. I don't know, through maybe some of the controversies in this season might have helped a little bit, but I feel like the region has become more and more of a must-watch.
Yeah, and I guess if there's any positive to be taken out of all the controversy, it is that it has been a talking point, and it has brought it into a little bit of focus, and hopefully now we can build to the point where it's our stellar gameplay that's getting all the headlines.
Yeah, and I think that would be, you know, if the one thing that happened from all the stuff kind of surrounding the region is that all of a sudden in a year or two we have like a team at the World Championships competing. Yes. I think that would be wonderful. And I mean by competing, I don't just mean there. I mean like actually, you know, wins, you know. Yeah.
There's a difference to being there and being there.
And I mean, part of me, I don't know if this is ever an event you'd want to sponsor, but like, I am super curious if there was ever like an OCE versus SSA kind of show match type deal. But that's separately. This is just thoughts off the top of my head here.
And that's a great idea. Cool. And you know what? I'm not making the next major, which is very sad, but I'd love to do something like that. You know, if I was at the major, like, hey guys, let's get OCE, SAA and have a show match. That's a stunning idea.
Yeah, I think even from like a off season type thing or something like that, I think there'd be some interest in that for sure. Okay, let's get right into it. I think the first thing that I wanted to talk about before we kind of dive into the controversy and you know, our community here, I feel like we have two types of listeners. We have the listeners that know everything that's happening in esports, and they're listening to every podcast, so I don't need to tell them. But then we have I probably like 2/3, I would say, of our listeners that they live on an island. They do not hear. They're not on Reddit. They don't listen to any other podcasts. They're just here. They play their Rocket League, and if I happen to give them news, then they happen to know what's going on. Which, you know, I think they know our casual feel for the show, I'm hoping to inform them a little bit. But yeah, the first thing that I saw was the SSA. You're planning on having some kind of, I know, a coaching slash kind of bring up the level of SSA program that I saw you kind of reaching out on Twitter or X or whatever you call it these days. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's So all of the noise around SSA kind of started with the fact that region unlock happened. So you can play in any region from any region. And obviously that means that it comes with a ping disadvantage if you're playing from another region and going to another. But what that effectively meant is we had a lot of, about 33% of our RLCS competitive field was made up of full EU teams. Really good sort of bubble EU team. So, and that was a struggle for us down here for our lower teams. I mean, our top team here did prevail over those teams in the end. But it occurred to me then that how do we accelerate our level of play? Because we're trying to improve in a bit of a vacuum where, because we're far away from everybody, it's hard to get consistent improvement. And I thought, okay, well, if there's EU teams coming to play, there's a couple of ways to look at this. Yes, there's the disadvantage or the potential of an EU team representing SSA at a major event because they've come here and despite the ping disadvantage have still beaten us. So that led to me thinking maybe mixed teams is the way to go. Get a really good EU player out here and get them to pick up two up-and-coming SSA players and play RLCS with them and mentor them and help them and guide them and push them in the right direction. And that's going in a couple of directions now. And I don't know quite where it's going to land because a number of people have expressed interest to help in helping some EU-based players who also coach. And it's becoming a little unwieldy to try and match up a bunch of players with coaches. So I'm thinking of maybe having a dedicated Discord where coaches, high-level coaches, can come and give workshops on specific topics, whether it's rotations, positioning, or mechanics in general, or specific mechanics, and where our local players can get in there, ask questions, maybe submit clips or replays and get those viewed. So there's a couple of things, and I think what it's going to ultimately land up being is a combination of these things. So I'm currently kind of recruiting, getting a sense of who are the SSA players that will be the future of sub-Saharan Africa over the next couple of years and have the potential and want to grind and put in the work, sort of filter through our region, find those players, and then get community-minded coaches, and a lot of them are, and say, you know, come and do a workshop or pick up a player and guide them, or come and play here and pick up two players. So a combination of all these things, because we need if we get good or come to better understand the EU play style, I think we will accelerate our improvement quicker than just trying to improve ourselves in isolation and having one team that goes to a major every few months and maybe brings back a little bit of knowledge. I think that is going to be too slow for us. So the thing broadly I'm obsessed with is how do we improve quickly and now? And so those are my ideas, and I've had a bunch of people express interest in doing it, and obviously a bunch of players who are kind of lining up because they want to be involved. So I think we're going to get something quite productive out of that as it shapes and develops and gets put into practice.
And I think what's amazing is when I look at any of these initiatives, it's always grassroots kind of, you know, let's start something, right? Yes. I think there's a lot of people that think they can't really create much, but I don't know. I feel mm-hmm. what I really enjoy about this is you said, okay, this is what really needs to happen for this region, right? This is the thing that we're going to need for the future, and we're actually going to start it and make it happen. And it's going to be a little bit all over the place, I'm sure, in the beginning, just trying to organize everything. But I think just starting the initiative and then kind of narrowing it down afterwards, right?
Yes.
It's better to have too many people interested than too little, I think will work wonders.
I think, you know, what I'm seeing is that, you know, it's hard to get something started. You know, if you've ever tried to put on a casual tournament or a serious tournament, it sometimes feel like you're pushing this rock uphill. But there are so many people who want to do something but don't have the time or the resources to get an initiative going themselves. And often it's just making it well enough known and saying, this is how you can help. You can come and do a workshop once a week or once a month or pick up a player. You know, just give the options and a little bit of infrastructure on this is how you can help. And I'm always amazed that there are people who really, really want to be a part of it. And And let's specific. I don't know what it's. I know nothing about other esports, but so much of Rocket League feels like it is held together by the passion of a few individuals around the world who do something. And, you know, whether it's running leagues, or I always use the, you know, ball chasing and backers mod, who get so little thanks for what they do. But there are these people, and you just want to give them an opportunity for them to share their expertise.
Yeah, and I definitely recommend anyone who is an up and coming player, or especially maybe specifically the players that are kind of on the cusp of maybe not being a pro and want to coach, to reach out, because I think those players would have a wealth of knowledge to really get something like this going. And perhaps, yeah. I don't know if you're a tournament organizer, someone who has a little more managing experience, and you want to reach out to Graybeard and help him out, that could be a thing that helps, yeah, as well from the logistics side of things.
And also just ideas, because sometimes, you know, I come up with ideas, and it's also sometimes a little bit in a vacuum. So sometimes, you know, some of the greatest things we've done have been some random guy said, hey, why don't you do this, or, you know, have this kind of tournament, or this sort of show match, or, you know, bring. So there's all sorts of ideas. And also, it's not just even, it's almost beyond. I want to find people who can impart knowledge beyond specifically the game, like this is how you get better at mechanics and positioning and all of that. There is, you know, we're dealing with young people, you know, as young as 13 who are now allowed to compete. And there's very little understanding of what is the expectation on that. You know, how do they show up as professionals? Because they, as much as they say, oh yeah, I want to get better, I want to grind, but then you send them a message and they don't answer you for 5 days, and then they don't show up for an appointment, or, you know, so there's that sort of mentoring as well. Like, how do you be a professional? How do you show that you want to do this? It's not just putting in, you know, 40 hours a week into the game. So, and then also just general, like, esports, our esports scene is a little immature because it's small. It's kind of protectionist. Like, everybody who's doing something wants to protect their tiny little section of it. And you know, we need to think bigger and think broader. And so let's not make the mistakes that countless other people have made. You know, come and share the pitfalls and the successes. So it's a whole... I mean, this is now I'm sort of sharing the broader dream and vision, but we'll start with some coaching workshops.
No, for sure. And I'd also argue, I think SSA is just, it feels like one of, maybe we have two or three regions where they're really, this is the opportunity, this is the land of opportunity a little bit, where I think some other, like, you know, we'll take the, you know, how dare I say big two, and NAEU regions that are, yes, almost over established, right? With pros and players and known faces and known, you know, casters, commentators, and so maybe they sit on their laurels a little too much. You know, they're part of the main cast. They're part of the main, the big things that are going on. But I think especially for those of you who are, you know, a little more ambitious and want to kind of see, you know, create something from nothing per se. Yes. This is definitely one of the regions to look out for.
Absolutely. And so I guess why I find myself on this podcast, and I've been on a couple of others as well, is I just want to, as much as possible, sort of invite that expertise, that knowledge, that interest in the region. And you know, everything from sort of a single guy wanting to coach to people who want to throw money at stuff or what, because it is so small, you can have a real impact. You know, if you start a little tournament in Europe or North America, you can have 300 people show up for it and still not make a broad impact because there are just so many people there. Whereas here, you know, if there was let's say a $5,000 tournament, it would be massive here. So with a small amount of effort, there can be huge impact for a whole region. So it's, so it has that going for it. If you feel like you want to have an impact in something, it's great to do it here. It's hard in the bigger regions because they've had so much time to become established and the big names have kind of filtered out already.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I guess, yeah, let's get some coaching workshops from that. No,
there we go.
But no, this is good. I like the broad vision. It's good. I think sometimes, you know, in the Rocket League scene especially, there's a lot of complainers and not enough doers, yes, not enough creators. And I think I love stuff like this. Yeah, I think from there, maybe it's time to get into the controversy. I think one of the big reasons I reached out is just it's so silly, right? Because I read it on X. I'm like, yeah, it'd be great to have you on. But if you didn't send that, I'm like, I don't, I'm not even thinking about it, right? Yeah. So I that's how simple it is sometimes. Let's get into the controversy of the SSA. And it doesn't have to be specific maybe to the team, but I want to start with kind of the non-region locked region. That's happened, the thoughts kind of coming out of SSA and yourself with that, and as well specifically the losing games on purpose controversy. It could be the second part of it.
Yeah, so it began with when the 2024 season of RLCS was announced. There was some fine print that I at first missed in the rule set, and then sort of became huge on Twitter as news got out, is the fact that while there used to be a very strict rule about you can't play in Europe or in whatever region you want to play in, you had to be a resident of that region. So, players from here couldn't play in Europe with high ping or whatever. But that was all done away with. Epic said there are no restrictions. You can play from anywhere in any other region. The only stipulation being that once you registered in a region and played in that region, you are locked to that region for the season. So you can't play one regional in Europe, one in SSA, one in OCE. You have to pick one and stick with it. And the fear for us, because we're developing and we're not that good yet, is that a whole bunch of EU people would just play on our servers who are really good teams and come and take all our places, all our cash, and potentially our major spot. So my initial knee-jerk reaction was I was ready to pack up the whole thing and go, you know what, I've had four great years in Rocket League, I'm done. I'm going to go and be a grown-up in the world somewhere because this is going to be too hard. And it's, you know what, all the main players here, I know them personally, I've met them, I understand and know their stories, and it just felt like all of their grind was going to come to nothing. And then as it started to play out, my opinion has changed on it because I do think, the best way to get better, and everybody will tell you this, the best way to get better is to get smashed by people who are better than you. So if there's a better quality of player in the region, that's good for us. It's experience. It's so on. It still makes me nervous, the idea that a non-SSA team could theoretically go to the majors. So that's my general opinion on it, but the consequence was a bunch of EUT teams came, as I said, about 30% of the field, and they did quite well. When we get to the playoffs, in all three of the regionals, half the field were non-SSA teams, mostly EU. Once or twice there was a MENA team, but an SSA team won the first two regionals. So that was a huge relief, and big props to them because they brought their A game and they made sure they weren't going to be undone. And because they'd won two regionals, they were almost guaranteed to go to the major. One regional left, all they had to do was make it to the semifinals, and they were a lock for the Copenhagen LAN. And so it all seemed good and well. And then the team that had come second, the EU team that had come second, they flew out to SSA. They flew out to Reunion Island, which is this tiny little island off the coast of Africa. And they were going to play from there, which meant they would no longer have the ping disadvantage, which would be huge for them. But their challenge was still that they had to win the entire regional, and Limitless, our main team, had to be knocked out in quarterfinals or worse. And what happened is that there was then the Swiss stage, and through the results in the Swiss stage, they landed up meeting that team in the quarterfinals. So they had the opportunity to knock them out in the quarterfinals. But it was incredibly suspicious because this was a team that had not dropped a single game on high ping in two previous Swiss stage regionals. They had not lost a single game. And then suddenly on low ping, they lose two, which meant it conveniently landed up meaning that they would meet this team in the quarterfinals. So it was a huge advantage for them. And there was an investigation done, and it was determined that the two series they lost in the Swiss stage had been thrown. There was deliberate manipulation of the bracket, and because of that, they were banned for a year and disqualified from the regional. So they never got to play in that quarterfinal, and that was kind of the end of them. And there was a lot, you know, for about 36 to 48 hours, it was the main topic of Rocket League around the world, which was kind of irritating because it was also the weekend. It was Squishy Muffin's last regional. He was retiring, and he should have got
no one really talked about it, right?
I know, and he should have got all the talk. He should have all been about him and all the props that he deserves. But yes, it was this tiny little region with a cheating scandal.
Can I get the question here, because this was one of the things that was brought out in my once again my island conversation. Yes. Here in our community was the essentially. Okay, so this is a very separate side story, but for our listeners, Elias Wabs and I went to see Dune, the movie, together, and we had an argument about this. Argument's probably a heavy term, but essentially the idea was this a tournament, like a problem with the tournament? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and then I'll say what I thought.
Any system where there is the potential that throwing a game is going to be good for you deserves questions, or so, and then there was even a question beyond that of what's wrong with it. If that's the way it is, and you have to lose a game to get a better seeding or whatever, then why not do that? So there was debate raging about that. And honestly, I don't feel like I'm enough of an expert to say, well, we should, another system would be better. Would groups be better? Groups are incredibly boring, and you always pretty much know who's going to come out top on a group. It's either going to be that team or that team, and the other two are going to go home at the end of groups. So there's a lot. I don't know, but sure, it seems weird that you're in a situation that you will do better if you lose a series. I mean, that just seems weird. But I wonder, with other formats, is there a way to manipulate other formats? I don't know. And I sort of feel like those aren't the conversations I'm going to be part of. There are clever people who should know this, and they must figure it out. But
I...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
No. I want you to finish your thoughts, because my goal is to give my unprompted thoughts separately from yours.
Okay, well, essentially my thing was, there are rules. If the rules, we can debate whether the rules are bad, but while the rules are there, you got to follow them. And they may suck, and they may seem weird, and they may, okay, well, that debate can happen somewhere else. Right now, these are the rules, and we have to play. For example, the fact that Europeans can come and take our prize pool. It sucks, but that's the rule. We had to live with it. So if the rule says you're not allowed to deliberately throw a series or throw a game, well, then you can't do that. If the rules allowed for it, well, I would argue and complain, but go ahead. But they broke the rules. Are incredibly clear. You're not allowed to do it, so don't do it.
Yeah, perfect. I'm with you that as well. And I think ultimately in our discussion, the one thing that, like, really, I don't know if convinced me or I felt sure of after, was if you win two regional tournaments, I feel, out of three, I feel like you deserve the spot in the major.
Yeah,
I mean, that's ultimately what I felt.
Yeah, I mean, the counter argument is, okay, if that's the case, then why bother with the third regional? Sure, I get it, and there's always chances and whatever, but your point is well taken. I mean, they had this team had had their opportunity in two grand finals to at least win one of them to make it a close race. They didn't. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
I mean, why play the third one? But I think ultimately this format is suspecting not the same team will win two in a row, right?
Like, yes,
I ultimately. So it's, I don't know. And it's the fact that you only have one spot and that, anyway. I've given my thoughts on that. But yeah, that has been, you know, I think that's a great recap of kind of the controversy overall. You're saying about 30%, this is the point I want to go back to, about 30% of the teams were from EU. I think that if that 30% continued on into the later stages of the tournaments, I think that's actually a pretty healthy amount. I'm kind of a little bit surprised it isn't higher. Although many players kind of, whether they have a moral quandary with it or they just didn't really want to play on bad ping. But it seems to have worked out better than it initially thought it would.
Yeah, look, I think the issue of being locked into that region for the whole season was a factor. So I think there's a couple of factors. Firstly, if you're a team that believes you're good enough to compete at a LAN, it seems, I do think there's a bit of a reputational issue because an EU team comes to SSA, they win, they go to the major. All the other top teams, they're going to have no respect, I believe. You know, it's like you guys came in through the back door. So I think there's a little bit of shying away from potential reputational damage there. Then there is the issue of being stuck in that region. And if you don't succeed, you've got nowhere else to play for the rest of the season, and you have to play on the very high ping and all the disadvantages that comes with. So I think those were some of the factors that did mean it wasn't a complete overwhelming invasion.
Yeah, and I think as long as there's still an SSA team winning,
yes.
Once if there was a big transition and it just becomes, you know, top four, top eight, all EU teams, I think that would really be the greatest fear with kind of the thing that's happening. But with any luck, you know, maybe these teams come in, maybe they get, you know, they get kicked out. They get bashed around and hopefully SSA rises right through kind of these players playing there.
That's ultimately the defense. Our best defense is to get better, because if we're good enough that the high ping becomes too much of a disadvantage, you know, I can beat players on high ping. You know, I'm around champ two, and if I picked up, you know, if I played against a bunch of golds and plats on high ping, I'd probably win. But as soon as those golds and plats are now up to sort of diamond two, diamond three, into champ one, champ two, now it's a pain. And now I'm like, okay, you know, I'd rather go play on my own servers and have a better advantage. So if we took that up, because there were a lot of series that I feel like our teams kind of bottled it. They choked rather than lost, if that makes sense, that they were good enough to win, but they let it slip. So we've just got to be better at what we do. And when we are, then it's just not worthwhile for the EU players to come here. Yeah, you'll have a bunch of lower ones to try and come pick up $300 for the widened prize pool at 32nd place or whatever. But for the top, we just need to be better, which then segues beautifully to our opening segment about the coaching and the workshops and all of that good stuff. Is let's get better so that we're just not worth tangling with.
Yeah, and I think ultimately through the ordeals, I love the narrative now, right? I love like that SSA is the one region where every single game has a narrative of is it the hometown or is it the invaders that are
and you know, and I think that's part of why I'm slowly changing my mind on it, because it does add an interesting story. The difficulty for me as a because I also cast a lot of the RLCS stuff is that because I know all the local players, I kind of cared quite deeply about their stories, their narratives. And for the EU teams, I find myself struggling to care, to give a damn about, you know, this guy out of Germany who's playing here. I'm like, I don't care. And that's hard. So, I'm thinking about, you know, how do I do that? I should show more interest or shouldn't I? So that's my sort of struggle at the moment.
I think really, like, and ultimately this will, especially if some teams stay in this region to kind of move up the ranks, The amount of care will be shown to those who are very much fighting for those top spots, I think, right? I think naturally that will be the... I don't think it is on you to, you know, Joe Schmo team number five from EU that, you know, barely makes it into the round of 32 or round of 16. To kind of give their story. And I think it should just stay focused SSA, because I think stories ultimately is what people look for in these things. I think especially, like, I think with our With our community, like one thing that really kind of resonated with a lot of players, or sorry, a lot of people kind of getting into esports, is like, I need stories, I need things to kind of hold on to. And I think that's one thing you're doing wonderfully.
And I'd love to see it expanded in terms of, I mean, that was one of the one of a number of things that have come up over the last few weeks as SSA, rightly, wrongly, for good reasons, for bad reasons, has been
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Focus and a center of attention is that there are really, really good people and personalities and community driven people in all regions who we need to start unearthing them and start to get these great narratives in OCE, in APAC, in SAM, in while Mina's doing well enough for themselves.
Mina's story has been And Mina's story is they're so good that they broke through that barrier, yes. Almost, you know,
and it's a fantastic story.
It's a fantastic story, but I think APAC is a tough one. Like the APAC story last season or last year, I mean, was just, oh yes, the known people that we like, but are like, you know, mid-level EU players are now in APAC.
Yes.
And, you know, so I think where I'm seeing this is SSA feels like the one region out of all those up and coming regions that has more of these stories, and especially with what's going on now.
And we all love an underdog story, and this is this has such an underdog narrative to it. So if we can turn it around, and you know, the grand fantasy is in 2 years' time we have a team that makes it to the top eight or the top four in a LAN or something. What a great story. I mean, that's you know, that's full feature length movie script type stuff, you know. so yeah, I mean, and we've got to be driven by our dreams, but it's a great narrative that you're quite right. And again, segueing to how we opened up, which is why I want to do all of these things, is and help create that, is because if we can overcome it and have this victorious moment at the end of it, man, what a great story.
And I think maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well. Where do you kind of see this initiative going? Where do you see the this SSA region happening in the next, we'll say, I don't know, season or two? Do you think the strides are going to be a lot faster or slower? How are you feeling about that?
Look, if I'm realistic, I don't think we see huge improvement this season. And it is a little chaotic, as much as I'm, you know, there's been interest from people to help the logistics of all of those. You know, we have to put that into practice and give that time to bear fruit. So I think for this next split coming up, starting in June or when – April, I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. We kind of just got to get through that as best as possible. I'd like to see more mixed teams because I think that starts to help. And then the off season is going to be really key. I don't know what the plans are from Blast or Psyonix for that off season. It's going to be a long one. There's no RLCS until January again. So in that time, that's where by then I would like all of this to be kind of nailed down and we have making definite strides. And for me, I think we start to see real fruit. I think we'll see occasional and spurts of improvement and kind of wins and maybe more SSA teams winning locally against the non-SSA teams. But 2026 is where I would love at the end of the first split in 2026 to go, wow, we have come such a long way. however we measure that in terms of how the teams are doing here. And I think one big measurement is we're a one-team region. The team that's going to this major, they have every LAN they have been at. There have been 21 regional events. They have won 17 of them. So I would love to see that team being challenged, and that the race for LAN is a toss up between three or four teams rather than just one team and maybe a half pretender challenger. So I think that's one of the measurements, but I think we start to see that bearing fruit at the start of 2026, I would think. And, I hope so, with steady visual, definite improvements along the way.
I you kind of mentioned it here, and I think a lot of our listeners would also love to hear your thoughts on the Blast takeover, the new things happening there. So maybe some thoughts on that. Maybe not just SSA specific, but on Rocket League as well.
But more okay. So I am an eternal optimist, and I do see the world through rose tinted glasses. And for the most part, that has worked out for me in life. But I have to believe that Rocket League is a strong enough game and with a big enough appeal that Epic and Blast are not going to let it die. I understand our community has felt like the ugly the ugly stepchild over the last 6 months or more. And, you know, Fortnite's getting new content and new things, and it's looking good. Half of Rocket League is now in Fortnite. And it seems like all the love is going there. But I honestly believe that there are things being worked on, and if they could just tell us that they were doing it, would make a huge difference. So that's my core belief. When it comes to Blast specifically, my understanding is that ESL, who's run RLCS for the last 3, 4, 5 seasons, however long it's been, were informed very late. Well, the change from ESL to Blast happened literally a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before the announcement of the new season. It was very quick. And I think they inherited, that was like, okay, great, you've got the contract, now go and do it. And there was huge chaos. And we've all seen that chaos and been a part of it and experienced it. And the way I see it is that they are literally just trying to put on a season as best they can and get through it. And then it's a 4-year contract. So in the off season, they rebuild it and make it into something amazing. So that's how I see it. I think what we're seeing this season is a consequence of the very late decision to hand it over to Blast. And Blast have a track record. Everyone I spoke with when the news broke, know Blast from CS. And they're like, wow, they've done fantastic work with CS. And I think R6 maybe. So there were positive things to say about it, but I literally think they're skeleton staffing their way through it because it was such a surprise. So we're going to have chaos for the rest of the season, and then I'm incredibly hopeful for huge things next season.
No, I think that's fair enough. Wow, the optimist. You know, this is great, Greybeard, because I feel like sometimes I've been the only optimist in this scene.
It can be very lonely. Yeah,
I'm definitely a realist in some senses, but I think what I also understood from a lot of the maneuvering that I see is that some of these changes are pragmatic. They're kind of like, having a separate company kind of run the thing was Epic's way of kind of we've had enough of trying to do so. But sometimes I feel when you bring in that other company, they can actually focus on it and make it something, even if there is smaller prize pools over the time and stuff. Because I think sustainability, like I'd rather have this game go on for 10 years than, make a couple of millionaires for 2 years.
I'm 100% on board with you on that. And I think we can all agree that the way RLCS was being done was unsustainable. I mean, a 20 or 22 man talent team is awesome, and all of those personalities deserve to be there. But my God, we cannot. It is completely unsustainable, and I am behind kind of shaving it and being more pragmatic and widening the prize pool. it has to be regarded as a success. There are 1,000 teams signing up in North America and EU for RLCS. 1,000. With the EU guys, of course, but we've almost doubled the number of teams signing up for SSA RLCS. That is a good thing. But it's hard. You know, of the 22 people, we've lost, 12, 14 of them. It's hard. But we have to go through this pain to be better in the long term.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that, and I think we have a lot of what would you call it? A lot of very hopeful people who really want to see this game succeed. But I think I think being realistic in some situations is better than constantly hoping for something that might not happen. And I think that's the danger of a lot of what the community wants is they have these big lofty goals, but no, like I think esports is in general, right, has kind of went down in popularity is probably not the right word, but I think
sustainability money. I mean, nobody makes money in esports. That's kind of being accepted. And there has to be a calibration, and I'm not even saying that it has to generate massive amount of income, but if a company like Epic, if it's a loss leader, it has to be leading into something. So there are decisions around it, and I think a recalibration is important, because I see it in small things with our, you know, a 16-year-old player here who wants, you know, he sees the Viteras and the Zens and the whatever and all the trappings of all the money they're making, and that becomes the thing, and they lose sight of how much work goes into being that good.
Getting so, there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of I mean, the egos drive me insane. You know, these kids, you know, they hit GC3 and they think they're it, and they throw their weight around, and an org approaches them and said, hey, we'd like to have you on our team. And they're like, they're making salary demands at 17 years old, like these ridiculous salary demands. Like, where are you, bro? You know, so we need to rethink it right up and down the whole chain, I guess.
Kind of on that note a little bit, I was thinking about, yeah, we have the 13-year-old like minimum limit. I was kind of curious on your take on that.
Oh, like it's definitely a rule that I think isn't great. I mean, if we made it say 17, 18 years old, then you've got someone who's 13, 14, 15 grinding the game, and they've got years to kind of learn and get into
mature
it.
Mature a bit.
Mature, absolutely. And it is one of those rules where I go, I would much. So from a development point of view, you know, it takes a few years for someone to be really ready for the top level of the game. This means now we've got to go and start finding 9-year-olds, 9 and 10-year-olds to sort of start, you know, saying, hey, this is an option, and sort of channeling them into programs that can help them. And that's ridiculous. I'm already struggling with the 15-year-olds. I don't want to be in programs where we're dealing with 9-year-olds. So now we're going to think about primary school Rocket League. So I don't think it's great. I'd much prefer, you know, guys are adults. They're 18 years old and going into the pro scene. And I don't know why they've chosen to go. I know they did it because that's the age in Fortnite. And I am not privy to all of that thinking. But me personally, I'd much prefer 17, 18.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you there. Yeah, I think I've gone through those topics that we wanted to cover when it comes to the tournament, the general kind of ideas around the tournament.
Yeah,
that have been talked about for a little bit. Is there anything that you're seeing that's a little bit concerning, maybe from, I don't know, how you see the other regions doing or what they're doing, or like lack, I would say, of initiative sometimes?
I think there's just probably a... you know, one of the things we spoke about is feeling like the you know, the stepchild or whatever is the lack of, for lack of a better word, love in the other regions. Mm-hmm. You know, there were no official broadcasts in any region outside of North America and EU. That's not great. And I know APAC is struggling with signups. They're the one region that hasn't grown their signups. In fact, I think they've declined. And that kind of worries me. And then I saw a lot of on Twitter, there were complaints about servers because there's servers in Japan, there's servers in Singapore, or what, they've got massive server issues. And it feels like APAC, certainly APAC outside of SSA, is a region that needs a little bit more investment, a little bit more love. So that's a concern. OCE they've been in RLCS for some years now, and they've generally speaking done okay. But I guess just broadly is let's make it a global esport by investing in all the regions. Otherwise get rid of all of us and just make it a North America EU thing. And there'll be lots of fans and everybody else, you know, it may or may not die everywhere else. But if you want it to be global and have all of us there, then help us do things and find local ways to make it big, because, you know, Blast are an EU operation. They don't know what happens in South Africa or Reunion Island or in Japan or Singapore. Find the local people to help grow the game and invest a little bit. You know, everything I do in SSA, this is a passion project for me. I'm incredibly fortunate in that I don't depend on any of this to make my living. Because if I did, I would have stopped ages ago. But there are people like myself and in APAC and in SAM, find those people who will help grow the game and invest in that. So I think there's maybe a little bit of short-sightedness, but it might be part of the recalibration. I don't know, but I think there are easy wins in terms of where you invest resources to help grow the game and make everybody better.
And I think APAC is one of those regions where, when it comes to esports, like, that is the region, right? Like, historically, and esports.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense. Why isn't Rocket League, like, why isn't RLCS overrun by APAC? It's, you know,
So yeah, I don't know, I'm completely with you on that. And it, you know, I think there is something about Rocket League with how unique the game is that sometimes it's missed.
Yes.
Kind of. How would I even put it? How do I begin to explain? It's missed. You go for it.
No. It's the best and worst asset of Rocket League is how unique it is. There is no other game like it. The problem, though, is you have to fall in love with it to carry on. Because if you're just casual, want to have a little bit of fun, Rocket League is painful. Just because it is so difficult, and there's no transferable skills. You know, you can't be awesome in Valorant and be good in Rocket League.
I wish, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And maybe that's one of the things that always made it, you know, hard for that transition, especially like Korea, right? I think that's always the esports we'll call Mecca of the world. And for whatever reason, it's just never been able to really take off, and that's just unfortunate.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, something about, we'd have way more keyboard players if that's the case.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, if I think about a dream job, I'd love to be paid by Epic or Blast or whomever to go into places like APAC and SAM and whatever and speak to locals and go, what would make this game huge? And do those things. Because often, and you know what, it is a uniquely American problem and also an EU problem where they, you know, something like Rocket League is huge in North America and Europe. It's doing really well. So they assume that what was done in those regions will work in others. And it's not. I mean, that's proven time and time again across esport, across business, across industry, retail, and everything. It's understand locally what will make people fall in love with it and invest in those things.
If only we could get there.
If only.
But no, I don't know if I have much more to add to that, but I appreciate the thoughts on it here. I think I've kind of went through the topics that I'd like to cover on this show. Maybe one of the things that I'd like you to kind of prop up here at the as we're kind of getting to our 45 minute hour mark is what are some things that you feel, you know, someone, mostly a lot of our listeners are US based, what are they missing from Rocket League? What do they not know?
If I, you know what, I Look, I can tell you what made me initially fall in love with it was the fact that the games are short. I mean, most other games are sort of single competitive matches, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You know, my attention deficit was a 5-minute game is wonderful. I mean, I land up playing for 6 hours straight, but it's in 5-minute segments, which I can deal with. But I think it is an asset that it is difficult, and there is nothing that beats the thrill of overcoming something that is hard. So, you know, people jump into Rocket League and they see people on videos flying around, and it is so difficult to do that. But the satisfaction of spending an hour and a half grinding, like, okay, jumping off the wall and hitting the ball, the feeling of finally getting a good connection that actually goes toward the goal, might not even go in, but it just is. The dopamine hits are maybe a little bit more spaced out, but they are far more gratifying when they come. And so give it that chance and give it a little bit of time to get that very satisfying dopamine hit when it comes.
I appreciate that this game is one of those games that it rewards the effort you put in, right? Yes. I think there are games where that's a lot harder to do, especially some of the larger, we'll say team-based, you know, 6-on-6, 5-on-5 type games where sometimes you could really improve your skill, but you don't really know if you're getting better. And also, if you're not playing up in a higher rank, then you're not really doing things that are proper in that rank. But I think in Rocket League, the more, especially like I would say up to easily champ, grand champ, right? The more effort you put in, the more you're rewarded. There's a few other games, you know, that come to mind when it comes to those kind of, if you're someone who likes that kind of challenge of let me learn this skill, right? Like I was thinking about this in a game I was playing recently, because I mostly hop on, you know, play every couple of days or so. And there's always like the weird kind of situations where my ability to know which way to tilt, right?
Yes.
It's significantly better than what it was when it started, but these days, right, I'm like, oh, I feel like if I practice that a whole bunch, I'd be so much better. And then it kind of takes me back to the time where I literally do those like obstacle course type things, you know, trying to get all those dead spots and figure those things out. And I'm like, wow, I don't think I'm by any means like the best player in the world, but even to try to explain to someone how I got to this level is very difficult.
But it is application over time, and it is very satisfyingly rewarding when you do break through. And let's not forget, the game's not doing itself any favors. I mean, there's been talk about Unreal Engine 5 for years. You know, our content is, you know, a new pitch and a new antenna. It is terrible. How does that keep anybody engaged and interested? But if we do make the port finally, you know, Rocket League 2 or whatever they call it, but where they're the creator tools and people like Lethemir don't have to grind in the background making maps that are incredibly complicated to play. You know, you need to download this piece of software and then this, and it's a LAN match and you got to do all these weird things. I think if they made it far more attractive to the casual base and they could make their own maps and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, click a button, maps,
yes,
on the load screen.
Absolutely. And you know, for me, it's a numbers game. If you get a million people playing the game, a percentage will stick with it and go. But there isn't enough interest that's bringing in a crowd of a million people from which you will get a sizable portion who stick around with it. So, yes, Rocket League is wonderful, but right now you have to really love it to stick with it. And Psyonix could help us out a little bit on the other end, making the game itself more attractive.
Do you think this game would have been a better or worse spot if Epic Games didn't buy it?
You know what? It's one of those things that's like, I don't know. I know in the early days when I wasn't even in, I mean, I bought the game nearly 9 years ago. And I wasn't involved in the community. I didn't make friends on Steam. I didn't join any groups. I literally just wanted to play the game by myself. But I felt like I had this relationship with Psyonix. They were the roadmaps, and this is what we're planning to do. And you can get one of these. It felt so incredibly intimate. And I wanted to buy, I mean, there were no rocket passes at that time, but you know, the DLCs, the Back to the Future thing and the Batman stuff. I always wanted to buy it because I was like, I've got to support this game. I've got to support the developers. And that small, intimate feel about it was just incredible. And I got to tell you, what did leave a bad taste in my mouth, I saw an interview, and I cannot remember the guy's name, the guy who founded Psyonix and basically was the main guy in developing the game. There was a wonderful interview with him, and he went through all the years through the SART BC days and all the technical things about how to, you know, make it better and feel. And then this game took off. And it was such a great story. I loved that interview. And then Epic Games bought Psyonix, and that guy, who's, I really wish I could remember his name, he made a huge amount of money, and he went off into, you know, bought a yacht and divorced his wife and just became a typical middle-aged, like, he abandoned this community that he had built. I was so disappointed by that. And he just became the complete antithesis of what I felt Psyonix and what he was trying to do. So we've been left with a game that is now being absorbed into the corporate nightmare that is, you know, corporate conglomerates, and hopefully we can still keep something out of it. So in short, if Psyonix had stayed the way they were, yes, it probably would have been better if it stayed that way. Would it have been globally successful? I don't know. I just don't know.
And I think, you know, it's a game definitely stuck in between the two worlds of on the cusp of being something that is just like unstoppable, right? But being, you know, a little too big, like it's in a perfect in between that it keeps kind of teetering on, and we're just hoping that it comes to shore, I guess, in a way that doesn't. Yeah,
and people, the optimists will keep it going, you know, but it does feel like sometime in the next year, 18 months, 24 months, there has to be radical improvement, because I realized not too long ago that the ashes of passion is cynicism. You know, you have people who are incredibly passionate, but eventually they become cynical if there's no positive feedback loop, if there's no definite progress that you're making. And then once somebody's a cynic, there's no getting them back. And that's what we're in danger of, is if we don't see the game itself helping the community make it great.
No, of course. Okay, I think with that we can hope.
We've burnt the hour.
No, I'm, listen, we keep a succinct. No, I feel like we've covered the topics that we wanted to cover.
Yes.
And I'm very much appreciative of your time, and thank you for being on the show.
And thank you. I jump at every chance I can to tell the story of SSA. The more people that get involved and want to support us or are just interested is fantastic. So by return, thank you.
And with that in mind, reach out to Greybeard, you know, follow his Twitch. I'll link that as well in the description of the show for our audio listeners. So you can click that and give him a follow. Give him an X follow. I think that's also a fun place if you want to hear his ongoing thoughts on different things and the SSA story continuing. Any other shout outs that you'd like to give at this point?
No, I think for me that's a very good place to end. But a broad shout out to everybody who's helping this community to grow through their passion, and I hope it pays off for us all.
Perfect. I'd like to I'm going to quickly thank my patrons here at the end, because they help our community grow and definitely help with kind of keeping this show running in its new form, which, you know, we'll see how it continues here. But I appreciate all of you. Young Slug, Digital Toast, Optimus in France, Space Bear, Chaos Maker, Too Much Space, and Zodiac22. All of you are awesome. With that in mind, I like to give some homework should the listeners choose to accept it. I've been trying to think of some like creative homework here. Like I think last time around the show it was watching SSA. But you know what? If you have an idea in Rocket League, some kind of idea, either reach out to a creator with that idea and see if they can make it happen, or maybe you yourself, right? Make it happen. If you message me in Discord, maybe I'll promote it a little bit. We'll see what happens from that. So that's your homework, should you choose to accept it. Make something small for the Rocket League community that I'm sure you've been part of if you're listening to this for quite a while. So if you want to give back, this is your chance.
Awesome assignment.
There it is. Should you choose to accept it. Anyway, have a great one. We'll see you next time. Thank you once again, Greatbeard, and thank you for listening. We'll see ya. Peace.
Peace.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.